Turn to John chapter 12 if you're not already there. We are finishing this chapter today. We're getting ready for John chapter 13, a very special passage. John chapter 12 ends by helping us understand the danger of walking in darkness. The danger of walking in darkness. As we've gone through John chapter 12, we may, without trying, even as we've gone through the whole Gospel of John, we may have somehow gotten the idea that Jesus is on trial, that we get to decide what we think about Jesus, that we're trying to figure out, is Jesus really from God? Is Jesus really God? Is Jesus really a person on whom we should be believing? It's almost as though we read the Gospel of John and we feel like we have this opportunity to make a decision, to evaluate Jesus, to learn more about him and decide whether or not we're going to believe. It's like we're doing a little bit of shopping and we get to do a little consumer testing and figure out what's going on. My mom used to be a good consumer tester. I remember when we were picking out a floor for our kitchen. Dad built my mom a new kitchen. And in that kitchen, he let her pick out not just the cabinets, not just the counter, but the floor. And they were going to lay down a vinyl linoleum floor. I remember going to the store with my mom. She got those little tiles of samples that were all laying there at the store. You're not supposed to take them with you. Just look at them and flip through it and look at them. She got those tiles. She didn't just flip through and look at them. She didn't just look at how they were rated. She took them one at a time, the ones that she liked, and laid them on the floor. And then she took her heel. She looked around and she looked down and she rubbed her heel into those sample tiles to see what would happen. And then she took her keys and she dropped them on the tile. And then she picked up the tile, she rubbed her key on it to see what it would take to damage this piece of linoleum floor. Because whatever we were going to buy, she wanted to make sure it was durable. We had three kids in the house, and it was a kitchen floor that we were talking about. And my mom wanted to make sure it was a good floor. Well, we might feel like we're doing this with Jesus in John's Gospel, trying to figure out, is he really believable? Is he really God? But that is actually the wrong perspective. We need to take the perspective of the man walking through the art gallery. We should not take the perspective of the man walking through the art gallery. There's an old story about tourists wandering through a European art museum, casually making critical comments about some of the paintings they liked, disliked, misunderstood. Finally, one of the attendants in the museum, unable to put up with this discourteous behavior, finally spoke up and said, "People, the paintings in this museum are not on trial. The spectators are." And that is really what's going on as we read John's Gospel. It's not an opportunity for us to try to figure out whether or not Jesus is who he says he is. Reading and studying and going through the Gospel of John is God's way of putting us in a place where we are being revealed as whether or not we believe who Jesus is. As you read the story of Jesus in the Gospel of John, you see so many people asking questions and asking more questions and asking for more miracles and then coming back with more questions. Kind of like my mom taking that piece of flooring and throwing it down and stepping on it and rubbing a key in it and dropping things up. Just before you want to buy, you want to make sure it's real. And that's kind of what they're doing with Jesus all throughout the Gospel of John. But really what's happening is Jesus is presenting them with the truth, and they are the ones that are really on trial. And he's being patient. He's being very patient. He's repeating himself. He's doing more miracles than he really needs to do. And really, all that he's doing is simply doing what God the Father has sent him to do. And here we arrive at the end of John chapter 12, and we find that the people have yet more questions. And Jesus stops answering. He's answered a lot of questions. He showed himself many times. He's performed many amazing miracles. And now he is done answering questions. He is done performing miracles. That's what we're going to see. We've been turning the chapters in this book and discovering new miracles. He raises a person from the dead. He heals a blind person. He heals a lame person. He turns water into wine and all these kind of things. And he teaches more. That's done. It's done now. The trial is about over, and the people's decisions and the true condition of their hearts are about to be revealed. But the sobering reality is that tragic results occur when you continually reject the truth about Jesus. And when we fall into the trap of putting Jesus on trial, when we fall into that trap, we forget really what's going on. We're the ones that are on trial, and we're the ones that have a sentence coming. And we are the ones that better make up our minds with the information that we've been given. Perhaps you've sat through some of these John messages, and you've been going through this process with us as a church, and you're still asking questions, and you're still trying to make up your mind. This message is for you. Because this book is about to take a very sudden turn. And you're going to find in John chapter 13 forward that the focus is very clearly on those who have believed the truth about Jesus. It's on those who have made up their mind in the positive. It's for disciples. Now, a message today certainly has application to disciples who have believed on Jesus. But I want us to all understand whether you are still trying to decide whether to believe the truth about Jesus or not, or whether you have already decided that. There are tragic results for a person who continually is exposed to the light of the truth about Jesus and continually puts off believing it. It's not a small matter. It's not as simple as, I think one thing, you think another, and at the end of the day, we all just have to have an idea, and that's fine. No, if a person decides they will not receive the truth about Jesus, that is tragic. And we're going to explain how Jesus and John here in this chapter describes that for us. Those who continually reject the light, the truth about Jesus, will experience tragic results. What happens when a person continually is exposed to the truth about Jesus and continually asks questions, continually puts off a decision, continually refuses to believe? At a certain point, you move from the category of a person who's inquiring, a person with genuine questions, to a person who's not serious. A person who has taken the opposite side now against Jesus. And here's what happens. Number one, spiritual darkness will overpower you. Notice what it says in John chapter 12, verses 34 through 36. The people answered him. Notice that. The people answered. He's presented everything he knows, and now they're speaking. And it's another question. We've heard out of the law that Christ abides, lives forever. He's going to stay around forever. So how are you saying that the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? I don't even know that they're talking about him dying here. I think they're just saying, if you're going to be lifted up and taken away from us, we thought, the Bible taught that the Messiah would come and stay around. What do you mean you're going away? You're going to be lifted away from us. What does that mean? Who is this Son of Man? by asking this question, these people are really, they're giving their decision. They're saying, after all we've heard and heard you say and seen you do, we have concluded that you're not the Messiah we were looking for. That's what they're saying. And they're asking more questions, but they've concluded. Now, Jesus says this. He answers without answering the question. He says, folks, just in a little bit, the light is with you, but in a walk while you have the light, lest the darkness come upon you. For if you're walking in darkness, you don't know where you're going. While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become children of the light. What is Jesus saying? He's talking about God's truth, the truth about himself, the truth that all of us need to embrace with our hearts. He's describing it as he has from John chapter 1 all the way through as light, as spiritual light shining into our lives directly from God, that we would know the way to go. He's also talking to people who didn't even ever hear of the word electricity before. Thomas Edison had definitely not been born yet. Electricity had not been developed yet, and there were no such things as nightlights or electric street lamps or any such thing. In that time, in that culture, you lived according to the sun, moon, and stars. When the sun came up, you were getting up because there was light, and now you could see what you needed to see to do what you needed to do to go where you needed to go. But when the sun went down, the time to get things done and to go places was coming to a close for the day. It was dark. Have you ever been out in a place without much inhabitants, without many buildings, without a lot of lights, and you're driving around or you're walking around? And unless it's a full moon, it's pitch black. We like to go to Pennsylvania every other year for a couple of weeks on a family vacation to get away. And it's kind of remarkable. You step out of the house that we stay in at night. It's in a mountain. There's no people around. You step out, and it's black. It's dark. There's no light. And it takes maybe 4 or 5 minutes for your eyes to adjust to begin to see. And you can see enough to take a few steps. But unless you know the property, you're not really sure where you're going. Even then, there's a way to try to kind of get around. And to do that, you have to look really hard up at the night sky to find the North Star. And really, what are you looking for? You're looking for light. A light to guide you, to show you the right direction to go. Back in the time of Jesus, travel was a little more precarious, or maybe not. Maybe cars are more dangerous these days. But if you put people from the first century in a car, and you say, let's go to church today, and let's have a relaxing Sunday drive, and you get into that car, you go through a few lights, and you get on the highway, you drive 55 miles an hour, they'll probably be petrified. What are we doing? Ah, this is scary. Scary? No, I do this every day. To them, going from one city or town to another meant you had to pack some things, and then you had to walk, and you had to plan, basically, how many miles is this? Okay, I need to get there before dark, so I need to leave by such and such time. And then you would go, and you'd walk. And if you were gone somewhere, and you were between one walled city and another, you were in a barren no-man's land. There were wild animals and robbers hiding out, and they waited for the sun to come down. They knew the territory. And if you're walking, you're realizing the sun is going down, the shadows are starting to come out. You're saying, we got to finish our trip. We gotta stop. I'm tired. No, we can't stop. We can't stop till we get to the city, because once the sun sets, we're not gonna know where we're going. We're not gonna be able to see in front of us. You ever get caught driving at night and you're kind of in a lit area and you're driving or you're with someone who's driving and then you move into more of an unlit area and you forget to turn your lights on? And you're driving around and you're thinking, man, it's really dark. What's going on with this neighborhood? They don't light it very good. And then you realize your lights aren't on. You know the unnerving feeling of driving without your lights on or moving around someplace? When I was a kid, I learned personally what it's like to move around in the dark. I was walking down the hallway to my bedroom, and the lights were out. I was about 8 or 9 years old. My brother was sleeping in the bedroom. We shared a bunk bed, and the lights were all out in the house, and I figured I knew my house pretty well. I lived there, and I was walking into my bedroom, and you don't realize how fast you walk just kind of casually moving around your house until you walk into something. And I thought that because the lights were all off, that the door was open. It was black, and it was open. That's what I thought. You know what? It wasn't open. It was closed. And I walked right into my bedroom door. I wasn't even moving fast. I was just moving normal. I just, without even thinking I was going to hit anything, just bang, walked into my bedroom door. And for the next week and a half, I had a big bump right in the middle of my forehead that was big. And everyone asked me about that bump, and I got tired of that. And they all felt sorry for me until I told them what happened. Then they, I don't think, felt sorry for me. They thought it was funny. When we're dealing with eternity, when we're talking about our relationship to God, which is kind of the most important thing there is, and what happens when you die, you don't want to be moving around in the dark. You want to know where the light is, where it's coming from, and you want to walk in that direction, and you want to get there as quickly as possible. That is what we're talking about, because if you end up walking in darkness, you're done. You're going to walk off a cliff. You're going to fall for some crazy ideas. You are going to be robbed by Satan and the false teachers and the prophets who are out there to rip you off and to take your spiritual life away from you. You'll be deceived by the darkness of your own heart. Jesus is saying here, I'm done. You can keep asking me questions, but I'm done answering questions. I've answered enough questions now. The light has shined bright enough and long enough right on your path. It's been like the sun at high noon with no shadows for you for the last 3 years, but the sun is setting now. The cycle of my earthly ministry is almost complete. You have to make up your mind about what I've said, about what you've seen, about what you've heard. Have you ever been at a restaurant? This is either something you've experienced with somebody or something that you've gone through yourself. I've gone through it myself. Where you go to a restaurant and you stand and you're at a fast food place, maybe you're looking at the menu and you can't make up your mind. You're trying to decide what you can afford, what the prices are, what the deals are, whether or not they're tricking you with these deals. And is there a way to, you know, there's a value meal, but is there a way to do a value meal with separate items that ends up being cheaper? And you're doing all this in your head. And then you got your kids trying to make orders, and you're trying to decide what to do. And maybe you're going to go to another restaurant, or maybe you're at a sit-down diner. You sit down, and they've already served you your drinks and your coffee, so you can't exactly walk out. You already started drinking something, and you're looking, and whoa, those prices are a lot higher than you thought. And so then you're evaluating everything. Do I just get an appetizer, which is kind of expensive, but it's a diner, so it's probably going to be a big appetizer. Do I get a plate, and do I split it? Do they have a rule that you can't split a plate? Is there a kid's menu? Is it a rip-off? Should I just get my kids' appetizers? Or you say, Pastor, you're crazy. Well, I don't like to just waste money. I do like to stop and think a little bit. My problem is sometimes it takes me a while to actually make up my mind about what I'm going to order. Not to mention just what am I hungry for, what am I really going to enjoy after I spend all this money. And we do that with Jesus sometimes. We know what he's saying. We pretty much understand now who he is and what he came to do and what the right response is. But we just kind of stand around and everyone's looking and say, would you please make up your mind? And that's kind of what Jesus is trying to prompt these people to do. He's saying, look, I'm leaving. I'm going away. I have something else I have to do now. I have to die. I've told you that. I can't keep answering more questions. I can't keep doing more miracles. You have to decide. The light is going away. You have it just a little bit more. And then he says, walk while you have the light. lest the darkness overtake you. What is that word overtake? That word overtake means to grab a hold of. It means to overpower you. So John writes, these things Jesus spoke, and then he departed and was hidden from them. One man wrote this as I was studying this passage. He said, really, what Jesus is doing is he's illustrating by his actions what he's trying to tell them with his words. By disappearing and hiding himself from them as the light of God himself, he was acting out the truth of what he was saying. Look, the light is going away soon. The sun is about to set. And instead of answering more questions, I'm just going to show you what that means and I'm going to leave now. I now have to focus on my disciples and prepare them for my death. If you do not choose to believe the truth about Jesus, there does come a point where Jesus stops answering your questions. There comes a point where he moves on to other things. There comes a point where the darkness of this world, the darkness of materialism, the darkness of Satan, the darkness of your own sinful heart, the darkness of sin, the darkness of unbelief, the darkness of wrong ideas, false ideas, overpowers you and you get left in the dark. It happens. And it was happening to these people, and Jesus was warning them. This is not something that happens. You hear about Jesus once and it happens next. No, it's something that happens when you continually reject and continue to spin out new and more questions. It happens. And we don't know exactly when, and we can't figure that out. We don't know. Only God knows. But it's something you should be aware of. It's kind of like the students in school. They show up. They're freshmen. We got a few of those in our congregation today. You show up in your first classes, and you take your first quiz, you do your first assignment, and you're kind of shocked. Like, yes, that was more difficult than I thought. I didn't used to study much in high school, and that approach doesn't work here anymore. And you try to study a little bit for the next quiz, and yet you really want to go to the game down on campus, and you really want to go hang out at the coffee shop and make new friends and have a little time. Oh, there's a late night party going on down at the dorm. I want to go to that. And, oh, I got a quiz. I'll do that. I'll do that during breakfast. And you kind of go through your semester. You're not really getting it. You're not really grasping the reality of the situation. Because in your mind, you're saying, well, I know the law of averages and exams are usually more powerful than quizzes. And I just kind of put in my time on the quizzes, but the exam, that's the thing. And if I can do well on the exam, that'll save my grade and I'll pass. You don't do so well on the exam because you didn't do so well on the quizzes. And, oh, there's a final. There's a final exam. There's a final paper that I have to write as well. And that'll swing it all. I don't have to get an A. I just need to get a C. That's all I need to do, just a C or C minus. Or what's the lowest percentage you can get in this play? Okay, that's all I have to do. Just put in my time on the exam and the paper. You don't do so well on the exam. You try to do the paper. And this thing just kind of goes on. And pretty soon there reaches a point, and I know this as a teacher in the past, I would warn students and I would tell students and I'd counsel students and I'd show them how to study and I'd bring them into the office. I'm really trying to be nice, really trying to help you. If you want to pass the quiz, you should know this. You should do this. There comes a point where you have to look at a student and say, if you don't get X grade on the next quiz, mathematically, it's not even worth you staying in the class because I don't curve the grade. I give you the grade that you earned in my class. And that may not be that way in other classes, but you get what you earn. There are people getting A's in this class, and I'm not going to cater to people not studying. You have to literally get a 75%. I've done the math. If you want to hang in here from a mathematical perspective, or I can promise you are now going to flunk the class. Sometimes a person finally gets serious. But sometimes students, you sit down, you talk to them, and they don't get it. Oh, what kind of tips and tricks do you have for me? Nothing new. I just sat here and literally told you what you need to do. Now, you can draw pictures in five different gel pen colors on a black piece of paper and do diagrams and pay a tutor. You can do everything you want. But you have to care. You have to take what I've been telling you for the last 9 weeks, and if you want to pass this class, you have to take this seriously. And that's what's going on here. Jesus is done. Folks, if you don't take what I've said, and if you don't take what I've done and what you've seen, there's nothing more to do here. There's no more class. There's no more lecture. There's no more question and answer. There's nothing left. I'm just going to have to go back to the beginning and repeat myself. You've pretty much decided what you think. And unless you change your mind, the lights of this class are going to be turned off and the semester's over. And you lose. The darkness will overpower you. You're going to fall for any other crazy idea because you've just decided you don't agree with what I've said. Not only does darkness overpower a person that continually rejects the truth about Jesus, but number two, God Himself. So not just darkness will overpower you, God Himself will shut down your spiritual senses. This is a very sobering reality. God will shut down your spiritual senses. It says in verses 37 to 41, although Jesus had done so many miracles before them, they still did not believe in Him. John points out that these people had received a lot of light. A lot. They had been to the edge of darkness and refused to step forward. The bright light of God had shined as the sun at the top of the sky in a sky without clouds. And yet they still refused to believe and to head in that direction. And John points out that that is not a surprise. Here's why. Because if you go back to Isaiah chapter 6, maybe you know the story. There's a time in Isaiah 6 where Isaiah, the Old Testament prophet, saw a scene in heaven of God on the throne. Remember this story? Where the angel said, "Holy, holy, holy," and Isaiah fell down on his face and said, "I am undone. Woe is me. I'm a man of unclean lips." And then God said, "So go out and tell this stubborn and rebellious people what you have seen." And we hear this passage given to us at missions conference time or when missionaries come to town and they say, "So you need to say the same thing Isaiah said. Go into the world," God says, and you say, "Here am I, send me." It's remarkable that missions conferences never really tell you the rest of the passage. That's the passage that John tells us about. And he's quoting, he's paraphrasing even from Isaiah chapter 6, right here, when these people respond negatively to Jesus. Notice verse 38 and following. They did not believe on Him. That the saying of Isaiah the prophet would be fulfilled. When he spoke, "Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" Therefore they could not believe, because Isaiah said, again, in another place, "He has blinded their eyes." This is after Isaiah said, "Here am I, send me." "He has blinded their eyes," God has, "and hardened their heart, that they should not see with their eyes, nor understand with their heart, and be converted, and I should heal them." These things said Isaiah when he saw His glory and spake of Him. Isaiah chapter 6. You say, well, wait a minute. Is this a big charade? Is this a big facade? Is this just pretend? Is it true that these people never could have believed anyway? It's just a play being acted out on stage. Jesus says, "Believe," and they say no. And He says, "Believe." They say no, and they ask some questions. But at the end of the day, they never could have believed anyway. Is this just a technicality? And this was just supposed to be this way? No. What this is saying is, when people continually hear the truth from God and continually reject it, then a prophecy kicks in. especially for the Israelites, but for anyone who's exposed to the light of the truth about Jesus, at some point, God steps in and seals the unbelief. I'll go back to the classroom situation. It's kind of like that teacher who's done everything he or she can do to get those students into a serious mentality to learn that information and to pass that class. But at a certain point, that teacher, a good teacher will do this reluctantly, a bad teacher will do it with a smile on their face, but that teacher has to write in their grade book or enter into their computer grade system F. This student passed the class, or failed the class. I'm not kidding you, but there were times as a teacher, I would have students, sometimes parents of students, call me in my office or show up and make an appointment in my office. The class is done. The papers are turned in. I've looked at the student's paper. I can already tell they're going to get an F on that too. They didn't do it. The test is flunked. I've warned them. I've had so many meetings with them. And all of a sudden, the parents who are paying for the class and all of a sudden the student who realizes what just happened, they all start calling me. Is there any extra credit projects that I could do to kind of compensate? I'll do anything. I'll write a paper about anything. I'm thinking, no, number one, you have another class to go to. How are you going to do that during that class? You're only going to flunk that class even without this. No, it's too late. There does reach a point, and it's not always necessarily death, where God says, you're done. You flunked. There's nothing else I can say or do. And in fact, to say or do anything more is only going to make your judgment worse. You've decided. And I don't want you to be guilty for more knowledge and more information. That would be cruel. You've committed enough crimes. We're just going to seal the sentence now. God himself will blind the eyes and he will harden the heart, literally callous. Make it like stone. There's an Old Testament story that illustrates this for us. Do you know who that was? Pharaoh. Moses went in before Pharaoh, and he said, let my people go. And he said, no, no, no. And yeah, like the children's stories tell it, right? And then Moses went back in and did another miracle, and Pharaoh said, no. And then he did another miracle, and Pharaoh said, no. And then finally Pharaoh said, yes. Then he said, no, and he changed his mind. And then he said, yeah, then no, and changed his mind. And finally he said, yes. And then even after Israel left, and even after all the firstborn in the nation of Israel were killed by God, Israel left, and Pharaoh changed his mind again. And he went out and ran after them with all of his armies and his military might to bring them back and to capture the Israelite people. And God split the Red Sea. Israel went through. Egypt went in and were swallowed up by the Red Sea. In the course of that story, the first times that Pharaoh said no, the Bible says he hardened his heart against the Lord. But after one of those times, the Bible changes the words and it says, God hardened his heart. It is sobering to realize that some point along the way, the more you learn about Jesus, when you say no or ask another question, you've moved from curiosity to criticism to unbelief. You've made up your mind, and God does reserve the right to harden your heart and to blind your eyes. That is one of the tragic results that happens when you continually hear the truth. The light of God continues to shine. Isn't it true that if you look at bright light too long and don't move in that direction, you just keep staring at it, what happens? You lose your sight. You have to respond to the light. You have to move in that direction while you have the light, or you'll go into darkness and God himself will step in and shut down your spiritual senses Number three, not only that, you will live in fear of what other people think about you. For good. That very reality will no longer just be a temptation. It will be the governing factor in your life, and it will prevent you from following the truth about Jesus. Notice what it says. This is an interesting little section here. It says in John 12, verse 42, "Nevertheless, among the chief rulers of the Jews also many believed on him." Many believed. You say, wow, this is good. This is exciting. Something positive is happening. But then notice what it says. "But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God." If you've been paying attention in the evangelism training class downstairs that Brother Christian is teaching, Romans chapter 10, verses 9 through 10 says, if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. This is not A, talking about you have to pray a prayer out loud. It's not requiring an out loud prayer to be saved. Number two, it's not saying that in order to get saved, you have to stand up in front of a whole church and say, I believe in Jesus. It's not even teaching that. What it's saying is this. You can understand and you can agree with all the truth there is about Jesus and say, that's right, that's actually true. That is true. But if you're not willing to publicly say, that's what I believe, that is what I'm going to line up with, that's the side I'm going to take, that's what I believe now, then whatever kind of believing you had in your heart wasn't saving belief. It wasn't the kind of faith that brings you into relationship with Christ. It was the kind that understood information and it knew things, but it never actually confessed. That's not a prayer you prayed. It's not a testimony that you give. It's being willing. It's saying, you know, I want to believe that. That's actually true. I'm convinced that's the right thing. But I'm too afraid of what people think about me to actually follow that. I'm going to stop short. These were people who operated in a part of Jewish culture that there's a lot of politics involved. They were involved in the Jewish political ruling body. And they've been listening and asking some questions over the last few years, and they themselves, they'd seen the resurrection of Lazarus, the healing of the blind man. They couldn't argue with this. They had no more arguments. They knew he was telling the truth. But they had so much baggage and skeletons in the closet and things that they were afraid of happening. They wouldn't step out and take the side of Jesus. Because when it came down to it, what was really governing their lives was not a quest for truth. It was a desire for people to praise them. In some cultures, this is very real. If you actually hear the truth about Jesus and agree with it, and you believe it in your heart, the person who genuinely believes the truth in their heart about Jesus, at some point or another, is going to reveal that fact. And it could get them kicked out of their family, and they know it. They could lose their job, and they know it. But it's going to come out anyway. Because they really believed. And you can't keep that kind of faith secret. You can't politically just kind of keep that private. And keep it. It doesn't work that way. Saving faith becomes public faith. It just does. And again, we're not talking about you have to pray in your heart and then pray a prayer out loud. Now, you could pray silently in your heart and get saved. Now, it doesn't mean you have to stand up before people, and when you finally do that, then you get saved. No, it's not saying that. Just real faith becomes public faith. But if the kind of faith that you have never is willing to be public, then you have a kind of faith that didn't go all the way. It's not saving faith. It's not. And that's a dangerous place to be. And we have to ask the question, is the truth about Jesus something you're willing to identify with in public, or are you more concerned about what people think about you and you keep it private? You've got to stop and think about that. Genuine faith doesn't stay secret. Remember my father, you may have heard this story. I think Christian told the story to some of you recently. My father was raised in a United Methodist church. They did not preach the gospel in that church. My dad remembers one sermon from that church all his growing up years, and it was a poem about two little raindrops, pitter and patter, falling from the sky. And he said, I don't even know what that sermon was about. I probably fell asleep. That's the kind of preaching that would go on there. But an evangelist came into the church for 2 weeks and preached the real gospel. And my dad would try to skip out of services. Finally, his mom got him to go to the last one. And he was in the choir. Think about that. A guy who doesn't go to church ever, hardly shows up. He's in the choir when he does show up, but never really there and really not saved. He was sitting in the choir. He heard the message preached. And after the sermon was done, he knew in his heart that he needed to believe on Jesus the Bible way. He had never done it. He was sprinkled as a baby and catechized, and he had joined the church and been part of the youth choir and played the trombone or the tuba or something in the church band when he was there. And everyone thought he was a great guy, but he had never believed on Jesus. But he was too afraid of what people would think about him to do anything. Until his cousin, who sat just a few seats from him in the choir, who did show up at church every time the doors were open, who was on the big committees in the church and did all of the charity and the good works in the little town and did all of those things. I mean, if anyone was saved, it was her. She was a leader in the church. He's peeking. You ever peek during, you're not supposed to, but prayer times, he's peeking around. And she stood up. She went forward in tears. She had never believed the truth about Jesus. Her life was filled with religious duties and religious works, but she had never believed the gospel. And it was that moment that my dad said, well, if she can stand up, I can stand up. And at that moment, he stood up and he gave in to the truth about Jesus. And you know what? He later prayed. The church was so bad, no one knew how to counsel anybody. So the preacher who was visiting had to counsel everybody. And it was a long line that day, one at a time from the pulpit, how to get saved. My dad said he waited in line and the guy told him what to pray and he prayed the prayer and all of that. He said, you know when I got saved, Thomas? When I stood up. I already knew the information, but I was not willing to publicly identify with it. But when I stood up, it all happened in my heart. It wasn't the words that I prayed later. It was the belief in the truth that was willing to be public. It was that kind of faith that saves. These people knew the truth about Jesus, but they were so afraid of what their colleagues would think and say. In fact, they knew they were going to be kicked out of the synagogue. They would lose their seats. They wouldn't get election. They would be done with their career. And they liked to have those seats. They didn't want people looking at them and saying, you did what? You mean I thought you were a good guy and you weren't? They're too proud. And they died that way. And they'll be cast into the lake of fire forever because they just cared too much about what people thought about them. If you continually hear the truth about Jesus and you continually to put off believing that truth, even if you understand what's being said and you know you should, not only will darkness eventually overpower you, God will shut down your spiritual senses, and you will live in fear, controlled by what other people think about you until the day you die. This is sobering. Last, the words of Jesus will testify against you at the end of time if you continually to put off believing the truth about Jesus. We have an extended passage of Scripture here, verses 44 through 50. Jesus cries out and he says, this is like his last announcement before he's gone. He that believes on me believes not on me. This is a summary of all that he's been teaching. But he that sent me, that's God the Father. He that sees me sees him that sent me. I am come, a light into the world, and whoever believes on me will not get stuck in darkness. You will move from darkness to light. You'll move from the kingdom of Satan to the kingdom of God. You'll stop being a child of the devil and you begin to be a child of God forever. It's that simple. If any man hear my words, though, and believe not. This is an amazing statement. He says, I don't judge him right now. I'm not going to judge you right now. I didn't come right now to judge, but to save. That's what I have to go do. I have to go die on the cross. But be warned, he that rejects me and receives not my words does have one that judges him. The word that I have spoken, that word, the same, shall judge him in the last day. So here's what's going on. He's saying, look, I'm not going to judge you right now. I'm making my final appeal. The prosecution, which is not you, it's me, actually. I have presented the final words and testimony. The case is being closed. The decision is going to be made. But I'm not going to make that decision right now. I have to go die on a cross like I've been telling you. I have to go do what God sent me to do. And that's not judge you. But the words that I've said have been said. And what you decide about them, that decision someday will be presented at the judgment seat of God. And we're going to go all the way back to this moment. And what I've been saying, including right now, is going to be brought up. And the fact that you refuse to believe is also going to be brought up. And that is not a good thing. Can you imagine being called in to be prosecuted downtown in Manhattan for some crime that you committed and you're trying to get out of it? It's a first-time offense. It wasn't a high-level issue. Yeah, it was a problem, but it wasn't a big deal, and the prisons are overcrowded, and you don't, you know, feel like you need to be one of those people in there. And so you're trying to bring in witnesses. You're trying to get a good lawyer to work this out, to have some kind of a plea deal or some kind of another way of solving this case that you get to go free, maybe pay a little money or something. But Jesus walks in. And he says, I have some evidence against you. The Son of God, God himself, who died for your sins and gave you plenty of fair warning, and you just put it off and said no. How do you argue with Jesus? You do not want the words of Jesus standing as a witness against you someday. You will lose. You can say, well, I had a few more questions and they weren't answered. That doesn't work. Well, I wasn't sure, you know, and my sin, it wasn't all my fault. It was the devil who made. No, that doesn't work. Well, you don't understand. I had a lot of money to make and it was such a big temptation and people would have thought that I was a bad. My parents were, they didn't raise me right and I was raised in it. No. You knew. You knew enough. You knew all you needed to know. And you said no. And if my records show accurately, it was so bad, God shut it down. Darkness overpowered you. You're more concerned about what people thought about you. And you knew that the words of Jesus would witness against you. And you still went on without believing. There's nothing we can do for you. Your decision was made. This verdict has been sealed for a long time. And you're guilty. You're not a child of God. You cannot enter into the kingdom of God. And you had so many chances. The words of Jesus, verse 48, those same things will judge you in the last day. Why? Because he's not just a man. Verse 49, I have spoken of myself, not just that, but the Father which sent me. I have actually said everything that God wanted me to say. What I should say and what I should speak was at the command of God. And I know that his command is life everlasting. If you believe it, you will live forever. Whatever I speak, therefore, even as the Father said unto me, so I speak. Again, childhood illustration. If you're a little child or grown child, we're all one of those two things. If you had siblings, you will definitely understand this. Mom and dad have to go away, and they're going to be out for a few hours. And they leave the oldest child in charge back at the house. Well, the oldest child is just another child in the house. There's nothing in the Bible that says obey your older sibling or anything like that. And you know that. You don't know much about the Bible, but you know that. And your older sibling comes to you and says, make your bed. You say, no, you're not my mom. You're not my dad. You're just my older brother or sister. Make your bed. No, I'm going to go play games. Then your older sibling makes lunch and you eat some of that lunch and then they say, go wash the dishes. No, you're not my mom and dad. I'm going to go outside and play. Wash the dishes. No, I'm not going to do that. You're just my mom. You're not my mom and dad. I'm not going to listen. Yeah, this thing goes on throughout the hours. And finally, mom and dad come home after dinner and they look at the oldest child and they say, how was it? And the oldest child pulls out a list of things that they were told to tell you. Written by mom and dad. Well, mom, dad, you told me to tell them this, and I told them that. I told them multiple times, and they didn't. They just wanted to play. Well, then I told them this, and I didn't. Now, I didn't discipline them. We talked about that last week in parenting class. I didn't do that because that's not what you authorized me to do. You just authorized me to tell them what you wanted me to tell them. That's what Jesus is doing here. He's saying, I came on a mission. God the Father told me what to say, even about myself. But it was him that gave me the commands. And I did to the detail everything he said for me to say and everything he told me to do. I've done it all. And if I look at that list, there's nothing left for me to do but to go teach my disciples a few more things and to die on the cross. That's all I have left. And someday God the Father and Jesus himself will judge all people, and what Jesus said will be brought up, how you responded will be brought up, and you'll realize that everything that Jesus said and did was exactly what God the Father told him to say and do. And there's no witness that can stand against that. You better think long and hard, maybe not long, you better think real hard before you decide to disagree with Jesus. Because he's just saying what God said. If you have a question, make sure that whatever I've said about it is accurate. But once you know what God says, you don't put that thing off. You don't cram for that. You don't do that at the last minute. You do it. Why? Because tragic results occur when you continually, that's the key word, reject the light or the truth about Jesus. So what about you? If you're the kind of person that is seeking and searching and you're looking for the truth about Jesus is what you need. But when you begin that search and you begin to understand, you do have to arrive at a conclusion. You do have to choose to believe at some point or another. And it may not be the first time you heard, but it needs to happen, because at a certain point, you will have so much information that is true and clear. And you can say, I agree with that. But if it never turns into a public confession of genuine faith, then you're in danger of what we just talked about happening to you and ending up someday in eternity with no hope when you had every chance in the world from God. If you need to believe the truth about Jesus today, like my father did in the illustration that I gave, I urge you. I don't know the timetable for your spiritual journey. God does.
But today would be the right day for anyone who doesn't know Jesus to step up, go to the back, and a loving member of this church, man or lady, depending if you're a man or lady, will gladly pull you aside and privately talk to you about this truth and show you how to have an everlasting relationship with Jesus. That would be the joy of this day. Now, how should a Christian respond to this? Because if you're paying attention, you know that this is for primarily people who are still trying to decide, they're on the fence about Jesus. How should a Christian respond? I'm going to give you three things to think about, certainly things that you could talk about in growth groups this afternoon. In spite of all the dynamics we talked about today, we need to, like Jesus, continually and patiently teach the truth about Jesus to the people in our lives. We don't know the timetable of God in the life of any person. Only God does. And here's the remarkable thing. Jesus was God, and Jesus knew. Jesus knew who was going to believe and who was not. And even with that kind of knowledge, he still witnessed. He still preached. He still made the offer. He still reached out. Those who would believe, believed. And those who would not, did not. And he knew the end from the beginning. Wouldn't that be hard as a human being to look at a crowd of people and even today, as a pastor, be able to know, kind of with virtual reality goggles that show, maybe Microsoft has developed something like this that shows me, little balloons pop up, virtual balloons on top of everyone's head. This person is sleeping. This person is not paying attention, even though they look like they are. This person pretends to be a Christian, but they're really not. This person is serious, and you're going to see a changed life this week. This person is crying, but it's not because of spiritual things. They are really hungry. This person has no intention of believing the truth about Jesus. This person is only here for other reasons. They care what people think. They're never going to get saved. This person could care less about God and will die that way. Can you imagine looking out and seeing that? It'd be really hard to put your heart into giving them the gospel message, into giving them your all. It'd be really hard to go and die for them. And yet Jesus, with that knowledge, gave so much information. We don't have that knowledge. Therefore, we certainly shouldn't try to sit around and figure out who's crossed the line of no. That's none of our business. We don't know that. We just need to continually hope, continually and patiently teach the truth about Jesus without discrimination. And people are going to come to the truth about Jesus. They're going to step into the light. Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. You should be, as you go into the world, people are groping in darkness, the Bible says. When you show up, it should be like a nightlight showing up in their life. And they get a glimmer of God. They get a taste of the direction they're supposed to go. That's what should happen in your life when you're moving around in this world. Second, you should confidently identify with Jesus even when hostility threatens you. You say you believe the truth about Jesus. Maybe you were public about that at one point in your life, and it's genuine faith. Do Christians ever struggle with being afraid of what people think about them? We do. And there are Christians sometimes that hold back from really doing the right thing. And that's scary. That's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous place to be. Now, you will not lose your relationship with God. That does not go away. But notice what Hebrews says. Or 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 8. Do not be ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, but share in the sufferings for the gospel. You have to be armed with this mind. You have to go out into the world and not be ashamed of Jesus. You professed faith in Jesus. Don't stop being public, no matter what that means to you. People need to see the light. What did Jesus say before? Don't hide your light under a little bushel basket. What good is that? Why would you turn a light on and then cover it? Let it shine. Don't be ashamed, no matter what that means. It got Paul imprisoned. It got him beheaded eventually. It got him rejected by a whole bunch of people. But a lot of people got saved. Urge one another to do right when we wander from the truth. I want you to look at this verse in Hebrews. We're going to close with this. We're written and told here in Hebrews, exhort one another daily. That doesn't mean every day you have to call someone. The idea of daily means regular, a lot, frequently. Not just on Sunday. Regular. While it is called today, lest any of you, believers, be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. You can sit in a church like this and sit down and read your Bible at home or listen to your dad read the Bible and study it at home with your family. You can go through this and know there's a few things Jesus is calling me to do because it's the right response. It's a command he gave. It's what a Christian, a child of God, really should do. And I know it. It's clear to me. I was taught that. I was raised that way. And I know it's biblical. But I can't do it right now. We have these excuses. We're afraid of what people are going to think or not sure it can work out. If you ever see someone like that in a church struggling, going backwards, starting to go down that road, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to huddle off in a corner and say, how's that person doing? Have you ever thought, no, how's that person doing? How's that person doing? Oh, we should go talk to the pastor about that person. And then go talk to the pastor. You know what I would say to you? Well, why don't you go talk to that person? Because if you love that person, you're not going to go huddle off in a corner and talk about that person. Can you imagine in a hospital, if you go to a hospital and all the nurses and doctors are huddling up, looking at what's wrong with that person over there? Oh, what's wrong with that? No, you need someone to care to actually walk up and solve the problem. And you don't necessarily need or want the person running the hospital to be that person all the time. You just need, we need as a church to be very healthy, very compassionate, very aware and knowledgeable of where we're at spiritually so that we can call one another up, make a visit, show an act of kindness and love, and make sure that as we go through the challenges of life in New York City, we're not falling away. People sometimes slip through the cracks, so they start getting pulled away by the things of this world, even as Christians. And churches do a very, very poor job often of reaching these people and drawing them back. We need to exhort one another. It is hard to live the Christian life in the world that we live in, even as a Christian. And your heart can get hard. And sin can deceive you. It can offer a lot of things and promise a lot of things and get you to talk yourself out of things that Jesus clearly has said. As a church, we need to be the kind of body that loves each other enough to, on a regular basis, keep reaching out. Hey, you're slipping. I haven't seen you. You're not really paying attention. You're at church. You don't really. There's a lot of things. If you are here with any regularity, you ever look around and get a little burden for someone? Don't let that go on for a year and then it turn into something big. You know, I should have talked. Talk to them when it's little. Talk to them when you see the signs. You say, well, I don't want to go to a church like that. Are you a Christian? Do you want to grow? Do you want to become like Jesus? Do you want to be loved by so many people that no one will let you slip through the cracks and be destroyed? I mean, I want to be a part of a church like that. I'm a pastor. Sometimes people are afraid to talk to a pastor and say, Pastor, how are you doing? There's a few of you that will do it. I need that like anyone else needs that. We need to be concerned enough. That's not judgmentalism. That's compassionism. That's love. We don't want you to be hardened. We want you to stay close and go through the suffering of Jesus together.